Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Zebra Strikes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clements, joined as always by Coach Whit LaJure, Bridgeton Academy. Coach Whit, how is the summer treating you?
So far, so good. Actually saw some sunshine yesterday, highs in the middle to upper 70s. Had seen nothing but clouds and rain for maybe 10 days, 2 weeks. So another good one today. I know there's more rain in the forecast, but almost didn't know what to do with myself on a nice sunny day. I know that's not your problem.
Yeah, no, we've had a ton of rain this past week. So lots and lots of rain, like thunderstorms and stuff like that. But you know, it's the South, so we would get a lot of rain, and then we would get some sunshine. So, and it would be it's like Jekyll and Hyde days, you know, mood swings. I always say that Mother Nature has mood swings in the South. So where you were, not affected by the smoke that turned, you know, New York into a Chernobyl site? Like, is that not?
No, we didn't get any of it. I know they talked about the possibility if, but like everything else, kind of in summer mode for me, to a fault probably, but like, I'm not paying attention to nothing. I mean, my wife and mother give me more news than Lester Holt these days. So, I'm not going to say I'm sad to admit, but yeah, I'm not paying attention to much, outside of whether I'm pulling that wedge from 90 yards, getting me in trouble.
Got you. I think it's interesting, just for the record, the idea that people are just, and I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, but when things just don't make sense to me, I can't help but recognize that it doesn't make sense. I've never seen a situation where there was a fire in one place that seemed to only come over and affect a certain area in another place. And then, like, for it to be categorized as just some random wildfires that are all over Canada, but the smoke only went to one particular area. Like, I I'm pretty plugged in the Northeast. Like, I feel like if things are going on, I'm aware, because you know you're there and family and friends all around the Northeast. I didn't hear anyone in Massachusetts talking about the smoke being an issue. All of the pictures that I saw all came from New York. They all came from the New York area.
New York's a big place, though, so it wasn't just New York City either. So I've got a player of mine upstate, you know, and they had smoke. So I mean,
well, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, it hit New York, but there are states on the left and right side of New York, you know, if you're or on top and on. But I didn't see anything from anyone else about it. It only came from New York. It was like the smoke took a beeline for New York and just like covered everything in its wake. And that was weird to me. And then I also thought it was weird that the wildfire thing is not a new thing. Like, California deals with this almost every year. They have a wildfire season where they have to be on high alert from smoke and everything that's coming from wildfires. Yet I've never seen orange smoke from wildfires, and I haven't went down a rabbit hole to see exactly why the smoke would be orange so far away from the fire. Because like, if it was near the fire, I could be like, okay, that is a reflection of the flames, but there's no fire in New York. There was only smoke. So like my tinfoil hat just kind of popped on, and I was like, there's something someone's not telling us. There's something somebody's trying to cover up that happened that wasn't supposed to happen. And now we're in cleanup mode because we can't tell you what really happened. And I don't know what it is. Hey, listen, people, I don't know what. Matter of fact, speaking of what it is, what episode are we on right now? Do you know?
We are on. Yeah. Oh yeah, we are on 17.
Episode 17. I don't want to tinfoil hat us. I saw you lean back in your chair, ladies and gentlemen. When Wit is like, "This isn't for me," Wit just leans back and does a closed posture thing where he crosses his arms. In body language class or in nonverbal communication class, they tell you about the lean back with the crossed arms. That usually means that the person is not, they are not engaged in the conversation. You know what is engaging? This whole situation about the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour and you being an avid golfer. I don't know how much you've been plugged into it. I've been plugged in enough that I have some thoughts about the thing that I'm actually going to share it on my Talk Spicy podcast today, which is making a comeback after I've been working on the studio, my little studio inside the Bat Cave. But what are your thoughts about this whole situation with the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour?
Well, I mean, the initial reaction is the same as most everybody's, which is, you know, the surprise or shock at the stunning about face by Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour. My brain immediately says, okay, well, really no big surprise. I mean, this is sport at the highest level doing what sport does, rightfully speaking, in my opinion, which is, you know, chase the money. That's what it's about. So, many of my friends are in the golfing. I got to be careful, but some certainly are upset and they just are distraught at the PGA and this and that. I think I was calling it like Kurt Flood. You know, I was going to the whole idea that they're what the LIV players said from the get-go. Hey, guess what, fellas? We're going to open this thing up. This is actually going to be good for you. And they were right. That's the seemingly, from my perspective, is they took risk. They took the money. And they were right about where the thing goes. Now, what I don't know is all of the different ways in which antitrust laws and all of that operate. So I don't know much about that, but I just think, I think guys who were made to look like the worst people on earth for taking the money now look like some solid investment guys. They made an investment both in a business proposition and in themselves. And as it turned out, they were correct.
So I think two things can be true. First off, obviously we talk about it a lot here. Number one, history is always written by the winners, right? History is always written by the winners. The LIV Tour in this case is the winner. And so the heroes normally come from the winning side. You're a history guy. You're a history guy.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
You know, heroes normally come from the winners. I don't think any of the guys who left the PGA Tour to take the money had any noble whatever about them. It was all about the money. And I'm not mad at them. Because, again, if you are a I'm always pro player. So I'm not going to stop being pro player because it's golf. Like, I'm always pro player. I'm never siding with the organization on anything when it comes to money. Like, the organization makes more money than a player. And so if the player has an opportunity to make life-changing, life-altering money, generational money, I'm not mad at it. This wasn't surprising to me from the PGA Tour because I never understood the beef. It always felt as if the PGA Tour was mad that the players got to the money first. That's what it always felt like to me. It felt like the PGA Tour wanted to regulate the money and therefore do what most businesses do, which is keep the money for themselves, or exactly. At least most that's of the money for themselves.
Well, that's exactly right. So that's why I'm saying I give credit, you know, ultimately to the LIV players for taking on. And I mean, I'm not saying they did it for anything noble. I'm not saying that, but I am saying beyond the money, which is obvious, and they've said that, beyond that, they challenged the PGA. Now, I don't know all the regulations of the PGA. I know there are people maybe listening that do, but they challenged an organization in the same way that Kurt Flood challenged free agency in baseball or players unions in basketball have challenged the NBA. You know, stuff, players don't get rights. Players don't get paid. Things don't change unless individuals and groups get together, organize, and take on the establishment. And I'm telling you, there's not any more traditional establishment than the PGA Golf. I mean, that is the establishment. And so these guys took that on. And I'm just saying the guys that stayed, i.e. Rory, let's just say Rory, that's too early in the morning to say the whole thing. The guys like Rory and others who stayed got a pie in their face when they weren't even told of this impending decision. So, again, I think that it just goes – so they've got grievances themselves with the PGA. Right now, they've got grievances that they have no – for. So, I say good for the LIV guys.
Yeah, no, I'm – because I'm going to offer resistance on this for a little bit. I don't want to stay here for long, but, like, what did they risk? What did these LIV guys risk? You know what they risk something. Kurt Flood risked something.
Yeah. Well, they risk never being able to win a major again. They risk their reputation. You know, they risk that. They put their character, their own self worth, right? Self worth in quotes, ahead of other stuff, but they were scarlet letter. Anyone associated with the frickin' LIV was a scarlet letter. They risked that. The easier thing to do was to stay.
The easier thing to do if they actually cared about everybody's rights. If they cared about everybody's rights, this is a quick fix. It would have been super easy. Hey, we're not playing. Like, unlike any other sports entity, if the top 10 guys in the PGA got together and said, yo, we're not playing until this, and this are done, that's getting done pretty damn quickly.
Like, well, hey, listen, Mr. Football. You know, who was the quarterback? I forget who it was, but World Football League. You know, football players, football stars didn't say, you know what, we're not going to play. Football stars joined the World Football League. That's what they did. They took the money. It's no goddamn different than every other sport that's ever existed that has been, you know, the whatever. You get my point. Every sport has gone through free agency. So that's the deal.
Yeah, but these guys aren't, they're not pioneers. They're not like, they didn't risk anything other than what
yes,
you're
they
talking.
Did. They,
if you're if oh their reputation, that's what yeah. we're going on. Hey, my reputation or $500 million.
Well,
my reputation or $350 million. I think I'll be okay.
Well, talent
the
gets
PGA
you
Tour. Well, it does. I mean, that's what I'm saying. They deserve to go and get that money. They deserve to go and get that money. I'm just saying that I don't look at them and go, oh my gosh, they really now history
they
will.
History they risk their legacy. They risk their legacy.
I mean, if we're being honest about it, Brooks Koepka does not really have a legacy yet.
Too early to call.
No, that's what I'm saying.
So legacy is over a long period of time, so they risk that though. If they do what they did, he
Phil
takes
Mickelson.
The money. Everything goes the way that it looked like it would. Okay, those guys are going to be pariahs that history is never going to say a single thing about. They are going to be a footnote at best.
If the LIV Tour just complete and flat, utterly just stop in existence, and these guys were, and this never happens, and these guys were not allowed to participate, even though they had exemptions that allowed them to get into these majors because they're all major winners, or most of them are major winners, like, if this happened and the PGA Tour said, no, you can't come back. You can't participate in anything that we have going on, right? Can they strip Brooks Koepka of the majors that he's already won? Can they take away all of the things that Phil Mickelson had done in the game to that point? They can't erase the history books. We have Google.
Well, I'll tell you what. Baseball does it. Baseball
who did they erase?
They've erased the steroid guys.
No,
when
they haven't.
When they know full well, when baseball knew goddamn full well the everything going on, baseball knows damn well the freaking guys they're signing out of the South America and Latin America. It's fraudulent. They know the steroids. They know they want to. It's the same thing. And then they erase those guys when who's to say. You know, half the guys, yada yada. You know the argument. So they get erased pretty damn easily.
But what's the erase though? Because they keep trying to erase Barry Bonds, but they can't.
Yeah, they can't. He may never
go into the Hall of Fame. But for my money, the Baseball Hall of Fame has been getting it wrong for years.
Well, that's a big pay. The Baseball Hall, there's not a lot bigger than Cooperstown. So your money's different than, particularly in the case of Barry Bonds, as obviously a Hall of Fame caliber African American baseball player. Your take on Barry Bonds is different than the other side of America who, you know, buys into all the bullshit.
No, I'm saying you can't erase him.
Well,
as much as you want to.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, you know what? You might be right. That side of America, in their mind, they may have erased them. But I still have Google.
That's what was going on with Live 2. All the men, the people the kind of the old timers, if you will, up at the course I play at. Guess what? Live was a pariah. And I'm saying,
That's great. I don't buy it either. That's great. But Sammy Sosa's not up $300 million. Right?
Well, you know, we always say that there's more things in life than money.
There are.
Both ways.
But there are. But that's not what they left for. They didn't leave for the more things. They left for the money.
They got what they wanted. They left for the money, but I'm telling you, they left in part because they're going to challenge the PGA, and they said that. Now, again, it was easy to do because of the money. I'm not arguing one against the other, but you can't lose sight of the fact they were challenging an organization that they had a lot of grievances with, many of which I don't even think we know. Like, I certainly don't, about the way the thing was run. So I think they were saying, yeah, let's go. I'm going to, you know, even if I don't believe in team systems and 3-day tournaments, I don't think that was the point. The point was, we're going to challenge an organization that has more control over me and others than it should. That's my take.
Yeah. Well, like I said, history is told by the winners. So the LIV Tour people get to talk that talk. And guys like Rory McIlroy, who foolishly believed that this rich white country club society was built on something more than getting money, now gets to sit back and look foolish in his in what he stood on, because he thought that they stood on the same thing. And that's unfortunate for a guy like Rory, who probably could have went over there and named his price. And that's before we ever even get into Tiger Woods, which is the biggest ridiculous point of it all. And I won't even get into, because that'll be a whole nother 20 minutes.
Right.
The other sports du jour, before we really nerd this thing out into some hoops, is we're kind of at that point. People know we're getting towards the end of the basketball season, which means that we're getting towards another end of Zebra Stripes podcast for this season. It's been a great season, but it's time to reset the sports. And the reason I say that is because you don't really get into baseball like that. And so in the summertime, we don't really talk about much else because you don't talk about baseball. Why is it? Like, what's the thing with you? Because everybody else around you gets into baseball. So New England is a baseball kind of place.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things. I think baseball is one of those sports, because obviously it's my favorite. You know, like, for a lot of kids, baseball is my favorite sport. You know, it's the one that you maybe had the Little League growing up, you know, back then. And then you know, some guys go on and play, obviously. And I had friends that played pretty high level. Shout out to Mike Bryant and son Chris, who were, you know, some of my childhood closest friends, Mike. You just grow out of baseball and you never play it, right? So there's that, you know. And baseball, as I got older, baseball is, you know, the slow sport thing. Like, oh my goodness, God. Love, going to the park, you know, sitting in the bleachers, watching a game, great. What baseball had become before this pitch clock and all that. So that would be my thing to use. Like, I'm intrigued. You know, I just watched a few innings of the Yankees-Red Sox last night. First innings of baseball of any team that I've watched all year. So I'm intrigued that baseball is addressing one of its biggest problems, and maybe that revival will get me on board as well as other sports fans. And last is, hey, look, it, my life has revolved around sport and more around basketball than any. So I just think at a certain point, I mean, well, everyone's different, but for me, there's a certain glut to it that you got to, you know, pick and choose, you know, what you're going to do and consume. So I just choose not to consume a ton of baseball and get myself. I don't consume a lot of college football anymore. That, you know, I enjoyed that more as a young guy than I do now. I'm intrigued by the tournament we've talked about before, the championship stuff. And so it's just a matter of consumption, and for me, what feels right and how much I'm going to consume. And so baseball kind of gets left out. But if I lived in Metro Boston, I'd go to Fenway a couple times a year, just, you know, function apart where I live. But I'm not going down to watch the Sea Dogs minor league baseball or nothing like that, even though that's a good take. I don't know. So that's my thing. Baseball, nah, you know, and no disrespect to it. I know it's a great game. Occasionally I'll tune in the World Series, but just, you know, I can't make apologies.
No apologies necessary, because it's not like I'm sitting around, you know, watching a bunch of baseball games, but I definitely follow the proceedings a lot more. By the way, last night, great overtime or extra inning game, 3-2 Boston, which I wasn't exactly happy about. 2 hours and 51 minutes for the game, by the way. Not bad for an overtime or extra inning baseball game to be less than 3 hours. Like, and so a lot of those things that and I'm with you, by the way, because a lot of that stuff has kept me from really fully embracing baseball in the way that some others have, because I don't like going to baseball games that I have to spend my entire day at, unless my entire day is just supposed to be, you know, sitting around drinking and hanging out with a bunch of friends. Like, that's the reason why I go to a minor league baseball game. If I'm going to go to a minor league baseball game, it's to hang out with a bunch of friends, drink some beers, you know, and kick it. It's not really for the baseball. And so, but I think that a lot of those changes are definitely helping the game, and I hope they continue to implement things to make the game a lot more fun.
And I'm down on the Red Sox too, which is to say, you know, big market team, of which there's only so many, right? And that makes a big difference in baseball, big markets and small markets, unlike the other major sports. Okay. And so here are the Red Sox every other year, now not even trending every other year, but last place team. And so I'm down on the Red Sox. John Henry, the primary owner, who may have more soccer interests and God knows what else, because I don't pay that much attention either. You know, Hein Bloom, the general manager, who this and that. And I feel bad in a way for Alex Cora. Like, wait a second. This is the best product Boston can put out in the field. And you know, what they say to you all the time is, if, you know, if you're fans and you don't like what the product's doing, just stop going to the games or stop watching, stop paying attention. And unfortunately, the Red Sox have the highest ticket prices in the league. Right. And their radio station, you know, more streaming services can't get it and blah, blah, blah. And yet they're putting out an inferior product. So it's like, OK, I'm just doing what people advise you to do in that case, too. And it's not my primary motivation. Right. I've already said that. But I'm participating in the no thank you. And
you're the live, you know, tour of Red Sox baseball.
See?
You're the live tour of Red Sox baseball fans.
Yeah,
it's not your primary reason that you're taking on the establishment, but
right, but
you're taking on the establishment.
Exactly.
Got you. I like it. I think that makes perfect sense. Well, no, I mean, you should definitely not patronize something that you don't enjoy. I think that, or that you don't feel is trying to win. That has been my biggest pet peeve with the Tampa Bay Rays, which I'm not a fan of. And people always say, oh, well, you're a Yankees fan because you're a bandwagon jumper. And I'm like, well, clearly that's not the case, because the Yankees haven't won a bunch of World Series like in the past, whatever. But my thought process behind it, when the Rays first showed up on our doorstep when I was in high school, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, and everyone in Tampa and Florida said, hey, you got to get behind this team. But I was already a Yankees fan. I was already a Yankees fan because Yankees have spring training in Tampa. Steinbrenner is heavy in the community. They named a high school after the guy, you know, or after, yeah, I guess after the guy, but after the family, the entity, whatever. It was like, why would I just jump ship from the Yankees? That's been my team. But I'm intrigued because this is a baseball team that's local that I could take stock in. And that's when I realized that not every Major League Baseball team is in this thing to win at all costs. And that's all I know when it comes to my baseball. It's the Yankees doing everything that they can to win. There is no rebuilding. There is no, we're going to sell off parts halfway through the year and get ready for the next year. It's double down, go down swinging. And so when I saw that the Tampa Bay model was not that, I was like, I can't come over here, you know? Like, I can't come and do this where we're going to build up a BJ Upton and then just let him leave. We're going to build up a Carl Crawford and just let him leave. We're going to build up an Evan Longoria and just let him leave. We're never going to have anybody who goes to the Hall of Fame and puts a Tampa Bay hat on, because we'll never keep them long enough and we'll never give them the respect that they deserve in being somebody that's helped to build our franchise. And to me, I just couldn't get down with that. I couldn't get down with the idea that Tampa Bay was never going to have a 15-year vet. They were never going to have, they might have somebody that's 15 years in the major leagues, but never somebody that played for the Rays for 15 years, because that's not their model. They're not going to pay them long enough to do that. And so I was like, yeah, no, I'm out. I can't do it.
Yeah. And Hein Bloom, I think, came from Tampa Bay. That's the Boston model right now, you know, not paying stars and letting guys like Mookie Betts leave you know, it's kind of interesting. I think Moneyball, you know, hey, we don't need to, you know, we don't need the stars, this, that, and the other thing. And I think just crossing over sports real quick, I think to some degree the Patriots are facing the same thing on the wide receiver issue. So it's getting a lot of talk this week. You know, DeAndre Hopkins coming to Boston, I think Wednesday maybe, but it's this week. And, you know, whether or not he'll actually sign, because, you know, that's a different deal. But even the anti-Belichickian piece of that, which is pay a superstar who's not known for practicing and all the Patriots way stuff, but there's only so far the Patriots way will take you unless you got players, you know. So I think I'm equating the Belichickian, you know, it's just team thing, and baseball, money ball, like, come on, man, this thing, you want to, like you said, you want to have some success, then at a certain point, you got to pay people.
Absolutely. I think that we really need to have a legit hardcore conversation about money ball, which has been romanticized, right, because of the movie. But if we really look at the results of Moneyball,
right,
it's not really getting it done. Like, the Moneyball thing's not really working. I thought it was hilarious, by the way, that at the end of that movie, which a fantastic movie, by the way, fantastic movie. At the end of the movie, one of those like lines of quotes talks about how much money Billy Beane turned down to go to the Red Sox. And then that the Red Sox won a World Series using the principles of Moneyball. And I went, no, they didn't. No, they didn't. Go and look at the total
payroll.
The total contract, the total payroll. Thank you. Go look at the total payroll of that team. That wasn't a $50, $60, $70, $80 million team that won a that won a World Series. What the hell are they talking about? Like, it literally messed the entire movie up for me. I'm like, what? Huh? No, they didn't.
Well, that's for a while. The Red Sox benefited from, you know, from their own history of not being able to win, right? So they were a little bit the little engine that could. So once, you know, even though they were in a big market, obviously, they still, that the narrative could be what you're talking about. You know, they could kind of spin it. Now, today they don't get away with it, so they just look like, you know, a greedy ownership, which I think, is, you know, greedy, ineffectual ownership that's putting out a lousy product, you know, and people haven't seemingly come to their senses yet on it. But
yeah, I mean, let's not mistake better scouting for Moneyball. Like, just because the Red Sox were able to like be better, like people talk a lot, but hey, you know what? Theo Epstein's pretty damn good at this thing. And so, like, when you no longer have him, hey, this is what it looks like. So,
yeah, and Dave Dombrowski, who, you know, they won a championship.
Yep, don't want to take anything away from him as well. Like, you know,
no, he looks pretty good. So, anyway, pretty funny.
No, so as far as so obviously, you know, you're associated with the Red Sox. What would you say about the other, and you talked a little bit about the Patriots. What would you say about your teams in this offseason? Give me a state of your teams going into the Zebra Stripes podcast offseason.
Well, I mean, the Celtics have in the last week or basically in the last week added strength to their bench via assistant coaches. So Sam Cassell, former great player for, you know, Houston, and Charles Lee, Milwaukee's top assistant under Coach Bud. So the Celtics have added veteran assistants to Joe Mazzulla. So, you know, now what remains to be seen is any change there in the players. So the Celtics will be a big story. You know, will Belichick make peace with Mac Jones? The quarterback position remains, you know, and Bill O'Brien is almost being viewed as the high salaried player. That's the narrative up here. Like, this guy is going to turn, you know, water into wine. Hopefully he does. State of the Red Sox looks as dismal as, you know, most people thought it would be in the preseason. And I'm talking about baseball people that I follow. Because I will jump on the bandwagon. I'm sure I'll do that should they decide to turn it around. But and the Bruins, I mean, the story there is obviously the coach that they got rid of, Bruce Cassidy, is about to win an NHL championship with the Vegas Knights. So the guy they got rid of goes and wins a championship, and they suffer an epic collapse after having the most historic season in NHL history. So, you know, the Bruins were known for what we're talking about, too. And I don't, you know, full disclosure, don't follow them the same way that I follow the Celtics at all. But they were known for just simply selling tickets, and the Jacob brothers not really concerned, owners not really concerned about going all in on winning. So I think it's I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm actually – my tone sounds pretty good for a state of affairs that's not good if you're a Boston fan. You're a Boston fan. Now, you can say that's the product of, you know, being spoiled for the last 20 years, maybe, probably. But it's not good. The Patriots have more questions than answers. I think the same could be said of the Celtics. You know, the Bruins, maybe they're knocking on the door if they can run it back. Oh my goodness, God, we've already killed the Red Sox, so we'll let them be. State of affairs ain't good.
Yeah, I feel that way about, I feel the way about the Lightning. I feel like when you're winning, especially in professional sports with a salary cap, the bill comes due at some point, right? You almost can't sustain consistently. You have to take that step back you just hope that the step back isn't a return to, like, a return to start. And it's just like a couple steps back and not like a go back to the beginning type of thing. And I think that's what the Lightning are dealing with right now. They had it rolling for so long. They were doing these cap gymnastics that people kept looking at and saying that it was almost like, oh, this isn't right. This isn't illegal, which was allowing them to keep players for the stretch run that they may not, they may or may not have been able to keep. And at some point, you're not going to do that. You're going to continue to win. And the people who are the role players are going to want to be compensated at a higher level because they feel as if they are, and rightfully so, they feel as if that they're worth more, that you should pay them more, but you can't pay everybody. And so you start to lose your depth. That's the first thing that goes in a championship caliber team is depth, because eventually those backups want to stretch their legs. They want to see if they can be starters. They want to see if they can do more. Denver is about to figure this out. Like, you know, if Denver finishes off and wins the championship, you think Michael Porter Jr. is going to be okay with being the third and fourth fiddle on a team when he probably thinks he's better? Like, no, he's going to want to be or have a chance to take his game to a level of a Tatum, because he was seen as that at one point in time in his youth and coming up. And if not for a back injury, he's the number one overall pick. And so at some point, that ego, that hubris, that whatever you want to call it, is going to take over. I think that's what the Lightning are dealing with now. The Yankees are the Yankees, and it's just a lot more competitive in Major League Baseball than it used to be. It's a lot harder to win a World Series than it was in the past. And so now they're in the thick of it. They're fighting. They have, you know, the philosophy has shifted slightly from what it used to be when it was win at all costs, but it hasn't shifted that much. And so, like, I expect at some point to see Shohei Ohtani in a Yankees uniform. And the better question will be, what do they do with him? Like, do they, like, at some point, is he going to continue to be, or is he going to spend his entire career as a pitcher and a hitter? Or at some point, is there going to be a decision made? Now, I don't think he's a good enough pitcher that's where the maximum of his money is. Like, I think that him with the bat allows him to have the highest financial ceiling. But the novelty of being a legitimate pitcher and a legitimate batsman is something that I think will allow his star to continue to grow, because he's not somebody that's giving you the quotes that's going to build the star. It's almost the mystique of what he's doing and the fact that it's not done even at the high school level for the most part anymore. These guys who are pitching are just pitching. My nephew, who plays at is it Central Missouri? Don't kill me. don't kill me, Nefs. Derek and Jake, they play at, I think it's Central Missouri, which is like a D2 power. And I can't remember if it's Central Missouri or if it's another one, but it's a Division II power. And at one point in time, when they were still in high school, Jake just started pitching. And so he would pitch, and they're running around. I'm running around Atlanta or the Atlanta area with them for Perfect Game, and they're just pitching. He's just pitching. Meanwhile, Derek is playing an outfield and still pitching, but Jake is just pitching. So, like, that stuff happens early. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I'm manifesting Shohei Ohtani in New York. I'm already saying it's a done deal, even though I have no clue if that's the case. So we'll see what happens with the Yankees. The Lakers, I think, had a great second half of the season. I think they are in a good place. I don't think that the answer is to make some drastic changes. I think the answer is to start building smarter and not with just one season in mind. I know that's crazy to say because it's LeBron and he doesn't have a bunch of seasons left. But I think you have to build some type of continuity if you look at these teams who are winning championships or competing for the championships. They know each other. There's no piece together team that's winning championships. If you look at the teams over the last few years, there are teams that know each other. The iteration of the Warriors that won it last year is a team that knows each other. Yeah, they added a little something, but they know each other. The Milwaukee Bucks, they know each other. The Celtics, who've been there close, they know each other. The Heat, they know each other. That Phoenix team that went, they knew each other. And so, like, I think that that's the answer. Like, you have to build so that people aren't constantly having to learn their roles and learn what they're supposed to do. Should they add some pieces? Of course. I just don't think it should be something drastic where we look up and now a really good piece of their team in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is playing for the team that's probably going to win a championship. And he should still be playing for the Lakers because there was no real reason to get rid of him, other than the fact that you wanted to make a splash move for a guy who comes with an entirely different style of play than what you have on the team. It wasn't fair to that player. It wasn't fair to KCP. It wasn't fair to the other players on that team. And it ended in disaster. So, and then the Bucks are just going to be bad because they didn't prepare for life after Tom Brady, very similar to the Patriots, who didn't really prepare for life after Tom Brady. And now they're going to have to get in the mud with some guys that I don't even enjoy watching play football. So I don't know how much Buccaneers football I will watch this this year, especially since I get paid to write about the Giants and I live in Georgia and I have Jacksonville an hour and a half away. I don't have to subject myself to awful football with players that I don't enjoy watching play football. And so if I have to endure Baker Mayfield as my starting quarterback, then I'd rather just watch another team play football. And that's probably what I'll do until the Buccaneers decide they want to invest in a future that I can get behind. State of the programs for yours truly.
Like it. I think the Lakers are in more trouble than you do, but that's okay. We'll take that up at another time.
Really, you think they're in trouble?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're LeBron and you're not really going to compete for a championship, then I'm going to define that as trouble. I mean, are they going to be a good team? Yes, but are they going to be a championship team? I don't see it. And I'm not sure how they get there. So I think what is LeBron's contract? I see him leaving the Lakers.
This coming year is his last.
Yeah, I see him leaving the Lakers. I see him leaving.
So where do you see him going?
That's a hell of a good question.
Like, I mean, it doesn't. So here's a problem with that, because I've heard a couple people say this. It's like, where LeBron is in his, you know, the only way he leaves is if he's leaving for a team that he owns. Like, if they, because there's been talk about restarting Seattle. There's talk about a Vegas franchise. One or both of those things might happen. We know LeBron wants to be in ownership. He's been positioning himself to be a part owner in NBA, or to be an owner in an NBA franchise. Like, I think the only way he leaves is for a franchise that he owns, because now with that rule change, players can be owners at the same time. And so I think that's something you could see, but I just don't know where he would go
I think the possibility is that he would jump on, and again, I know we've talked about his sons before, but he would jump on somewhere where they were in fact poised to win, a la Bill Walton, 86 Celtics, a la Shaq to the Celtics at the end of the line, and, you know, Blake Griffin for the Celtics this year. I mean, obviously LeBron is bigger than any of those guys. So I just think So look for LeBron to maybe he signs at Golden State to help put them back over the top. Maybe he, that's just one that comes to mind. Okay.
That's interesting. I mean, obviously I'm hoping that it doesn't happen from a Lakers fan standpoint, right. But it's an interesting thought. I don't see somewhere that he just goes, but I mean, clearly he does what he wants. I think he has it set up exactly how he wants it in California. I don't know how a better situation can be there for him, unless he just says, I'm tired of paying these California taxes, which, hey, I ain't mad at you at all if you decide that.
Last time I checked, Golden State was in California too, though. So
yeah, that's true. Do you think, sidebar, do you think we'll see California become two states in our lifetime?
No.
Okay.
For the same reason that I don't see New York becoming two states, you know.
They just don't want to. You think the state doesn't want to give up that level of power, that level of control?
Definitely agree with that statement, for sure. Yes. And you're getting political on me too, which is I had to cut my mother and wife off like on Saturday night, because it was primarily my mother, not my wife, but she started getting political as well. While I was trying to enjoy a couple of drinks. And I said, oh, my goodness, God. So I would say next to baseball, like in the summer.
Did you lean back on her and cross your arms?
Oh, I think I did that. And then I think I finally said, please, can we change the subject? Yeah. My quick thing would be, though, you know, states are fun, but I think states are going the way that nation states are going, which is they're there really for the fans. They're there for the growing public, because the people that control these states, seriously, don't really care that much about the state. It's just a nice concept. The same way the country, I mean, it really goes back to right back to our thing on live. Like, we like to make it about nations and states when we can create good guys and bad guys and get, you know, and I'm not saying there aren't bad guys in the world, bad states and all of that, but that is just a political game. And we use these nation states to rally, you know, support for whatever, you know, usually war, but whatever we need to do to get people on board something. And I think states are, you know, less and less, they're basically going the same way. And if you look at the history of interstate commerce or whatever, states, you know, they're not irrelevant yet, but you know, they're
towards irrelevancy.
Anyway, I'll tell you what's more interesting to me. 54 minutes in, and we've left, you know, plus or minus 6 to 10 minutes for a discussion of the NBA championship, which usually is what drives this thing. And I am only left to conclude that you, like me, I mean, believe this thing is over. We're going to make short work of this conversation because it's over. And we didn't want to start the pod with something that there really wasn't going to be a whole lot of to say about anyway. Is that your take on this thing?
Well, I mean, besides the fact that I didn't think Miami would win a game, like, now watching after they did win a game and watching the subsequent two games following that, this thing is over. Like, whether it's over tonight or it's over on Wednesday or Thursday, whenever they play again, it's over. Like, I think that Miami was fortunate to get a win. Like, they, if you look at the amount of shots that Denver missed in that game too, like, Miami was fortunate enough to get a win. And this, I thought that the extra time off would be to the advantage of Miami. It's not. It's not. Because the that sun in the middle that the entire thing just seems to be revolving around gets more time to rest, which allows him to just operate like a bull in the china shop and run right through everybody on the Heat's team. Like, it's yeah, this is a wrap.
Well, what we don't know too is, and I don't think it would have made much of a difference. So I agree with you, first of all. It's over tonight. I would bet virtually, which is maybe why Miami has a chance, but I would bet all, if not most of my life savings on Denver tonight to win in Denver. But, you know, if Tyler Hero had played, could they have snuck out another one? I obviously thought Miami could stretch this thing out. I think there's a very small chance that they get tonight. I mean, incredibly small chance. So, and would Tyler Hero, you know, have been worth another win to them? Possibly. I mean, we're just not, you know, possibly. Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe, but Tyler Hero, it is that win. Like, that win that they got, that's the win that Tyler Hero would have. Because Duncan Robinson played like Tyler Hero in that game. And so, I don't know. Tyler Hero does zero on defense, so I don't really know where he's not stopping anybody. Jamal Murray sees Tyler Hero in front of him, and he sees, like, steak dinner. He's eating. And so I don't really know. I think some of these basketball is going to have to figure out, like, what they want to be. Because if you want to just lean into, you know, hey, we're going to be gritty and tough and defensive minded and all that jazz, then Tyler Hero ain't going to be your dude. Tyler Hero's not going to get you where you need to get ultimately. And that's a problem, I think, for the Heat, unless they want to change up or switch up their thought process when it comes to how they want to win ball games. But that could just be because Tyler Hero's not there.
I think you got to give, though, I agree with you, but you got to give the Heat credit, which you already have, for getting as far as they've got. And then you got to say, like, if you could take Heat culture, right, that's getting a lot of publicity right now. If you could take the Heat culture and inject that onto the Celtics, for instance, and then put a Tyler Hero as a shot maker in the middle of the Celtics lineup, right? Then all of a sudden we're not even talking about the Miami Heat. So to you know, we're talking about what has taken and put the Celtics over the top, right? Maybe something those assistant coaches are going to bring in part, right? Some more toughness and tactics. But if you flip it back to Miami, okay, good for Miami for going further than anyone expected them to go. And okay, they fall short, But and this is where I don't follow the Heat enough to know where they stand. But okay, add some pieces to Miami to what they've already got, and you know, guess what?
Yeah,
they got something.
I mean, that's the thing. Are those pieces one Dame Lillard? Like that's one of the things. But I wanted to try to think of something a lot more interesting to talk about with this series than just the games, because I think we both believe this is a foregone conclusion. And it's Jokic and the idea of how good Jokic is in comparison. The game has changed, so I want to acknowledge that the game has changed. And that is part of what No, let me rewind. The game being changed and what I've seen from Jokic only galvanizes for me the idea of some of these older players saying that they would have still been dominant today. Because I'm watching an unathletic 7-footer, 7'2", whatever he is, an unathletic 7-footer who's skilled and smart dominate a league that doesn't have a big man outside of Philadelphia. Outside of Philadelphia, you cannot find me a legitimate center that is, no, I should take that back. Philadelphia and Minnesota, right? Gobert is in Minnesota. You can't find me legitimate big men anywhere.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to, I know your point, so you're going to, don't take too much exception to this, but because you're, but before the Lakers-Denver series, you also said, as you recall, that you wanted to see Jokic get anything done against AD. So,
and I was wrong. I know you're, I was super wrong.
So I know you're not looking at AD as your obviously your center prototype, but he, you know, that was my point.
I thought that the athleticism of AD would counterbalance what Jokic brought to the table. It did not, because he just ran right over him. He was like, "Yo, get out the way." Like you're not big enough, you're not strong enough, you're not tall, you're not tough enough, especially you're not tough enough to keep me from just getting to this block and putting two after two after two after two in your head. Oh, and by the way, I will step out here and hit this jump shot every once in a while. And so like I was shocked by how easy he made it look versus AD. Because I was under the assumption that AD was that dude. That's the number one reason why I felt like this Denver Heat series would go this way. Because now you're going from AD to Bam, and no diss to Bam, but he's not AD. He's not AD defensively. He's not AD offensively. So if Jokic is going to do that to AD, what the hell is he going to do to Bam, who's 6'9"? Like,
yeah, and I think the only thing you got to be careful about, and again, you're not doing it, but I think for listeners is, you know, this doesn't, you know, your argument isn't saying that the big stiff has a place, because that's right. I mean, you anytime you talk about Jokic. You right, Jokic. You got to lead with skill,
and then I led with athleticism, and I should have led with skill. But I said he's an unathletic, skilled. But I should have said he's a skilled guy who just isn't athletic.
And then you got to look at, you know, your definition of athletic, because we have a tendency to obviously to look at NBA athleticism, athletic. Right? But running jump, You know, and so athleticism, right? When you look at it, I've read some books on this before, right? Coordination, okay. Coordination, balance, body movement, right? Timing. Those are all important elements if we broaden our stereotypical definition of athleticism, because Jokic has all of those other traits of athleticism. He doesn't have the speed and verticality that we typically associate with NBA.
Or the agility. He doesn't have the
agility. Yeah.
He doesn't move laterally quickly either, but he knows how to use his – he has great body control. Fantastic body control. And so here's my thing. People are oh my God, Jokic is doing something, things we haven't seen before. Yes, he's doing something, things we haven't seen before consistently, because he's allowed to operate in a manner that big men have never been allowed to operate. I go back to Lakers, Sixers, AI in the finals, Shaq, game two, when he went for 30-something, 20 rebounds, 9 assists, 6 blocks. Like, he did that. And his game was predicated on him being on a block, because that's what he was told he had to be. But if we remember early Shaq, Orlando Magic Shaq, grab the rebound and just take off with it Shaq. Imagine if he had been allowed to lean into that. And now you put that level of athleticism, that level of athleticism where he's allowed to then continue to build on the skills. He wasn't a bad ball handler either. He's always been a better passer than people have given him credit for out of the post. He just had to play a position in a way that never allowed him to do the things that Jokic is able to do. Tim Duncan, similar. David Robinson, similar. Like, these guys were never allowed to operate in the manner that Jokic has been given the freedom, and they had to do all that while also going against other Jokic's. Like, they had to go against other guys who were big and strong and athletic. When Jokic is 7'2", and the 7'2" guy is an anomaly on a court nowadays, that makes a difference. When the 6'9" guy, the 6'9", the 6'10" guy is now the guy who's ending up being the center because of the way in which the game is played now, and then you get an anomaly like Jokic, he's going to dominate. He's going to dominate, because how can he?
Well, I smelled the change. I don't know, more than 15 years ago, I was talking with God rest his soul, rest in peace, Tom Konchelski, unbelievable friend to everybody, friend of the game, known as a high school evaluator, but the best of the best. So I say, hey, Tom, I think the game's being played at a higher level. It's more sophisticated than it was. And he vehemently disagreed with me. This is many, many, you know, again, close to 15 years ago. And I said, really, you know, and he was more in, you know, he didn't say the 69 Knicks or anything like that. Sometimes you say, you know, the beauty of basketball is the beauty of basketball. The more things change, the more stays the same. There's a piece of that. But I said, Tom, there's something else going on here. And, you know, I've since talked to coaches. I'll occasionally ask them what they think. And it almost seems foregone conclusion now, right? Technology, so much more video. Players are into it, you know, all that stuff. But to your point, too, coaching. Like, the game is being coached at a higher level, with all due respect to Red Auerbach and the people he used to coach against, okay? It just evolved. The game
is chess and checkers.
Yeah, I think you're right that you know, and the Shaq is a great example. I mean, I think Duncan was allowed to do a little bit. Who was the other guy you used as an example?
David Robinson.
Yeah, you a little bit, you know, because Pop, that's what's allowed Pop to hang around so much. The guy, you know, was I'm not, you know, whether he's ahead of his time or up with the time. So, yeah, I mean, to some degree, you could say, you know, same old thing. I mean, coaches had to, or, you know, players were beholden to coaches who only knew what they knew. And maybe somehow, some way, we're saying the same thing again as this thing continues to evolve. You know, Jokic is the big, you know, he benefits from, got you know, from just better coaching, more technology, better training, all the above, you know.
I'll say this, and I'll get us out of this on this. I want to see if the Jokic effect gives life to more big men.
Well,
like, I want to see if that happens. Like, not the, don't give me, oh, he's 6'10", he's 6'9". No. Is the Jokic effect going to give us more of the 7'2" guy or the 7-foot guy or the 7'1" guy that somebody believes can be the next Jokic?
Drafted again. I know they said it the other night, and I mean, it was down the line. I mean, if you can see it. Let me, you know, I don't think it was sixth or, you know, I don't think it was something down the line because Aaron Gordon was drafted ahead of him. Okay.
Yeah. He was a 41st overall pick.
So, I mean, to what we're talking about, the NBA, right? I always laugh about this in regards to recruiting anyway, right? I mean, these are the best of the best trying to evaluate players. Head Jokic, 41st, because they saw him the same way we did, as a high risk big whose lack of athleticism wouldn't allow him to play in the league.
Yeah, but again, here is part of the rub, right? It's not like Jokic showed up and was all of a sudden Jokic. Like, this isn't like, it took him a couple of years. It took him a few years.
Yeah.
But he also wasn't like a baby when he rolled in. Like, he wasn't an 18-year-old rolling in. And he played professionally overseas. And so, like, he had some seasoning on him, you know? And so, like, he gets here, and then those things start to, like, get better.
Hey, by the way, so here's what I'll say. So I agree with your underlying premise here. Yes, we can expect teams at least to try to draft somewhere that next guy, because they realize that the way the game's being played, that's a game changer. We haven't said his name in a while, and he's different, but Victor Wembanyama, Victor is another is it Victor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. Oh, yeah, no. Hey, another game changer, not to be confused with Jokic. And again, he's you know, thin and all that. But I'm just saying there are young guys out there watching exactly what we're watching, and there are coaches watching what we're watching. And so somehow, some way, the development of Jokic and the versatile set of skills that he has, I don't think we're done seeing them in the next decade.
By the way, while everybody is speaking so hyperbolic about Jokic, we should remember that he's not like doing special things as a scorer or rebounder. Like, we've seen these numbers before. These are not like anomalous numbers. The only thing that he is really doing beyond what we've seen before out of a big man is the assist numbers. And really, that's only like in the last like few years that he's been 7 assists plus, you know. But hit like points a game, he averaged 24.5 points a game this year. You know, I mean, it's not like he's out there banging you 32 a game. 11.8 rebounds. That's great, but that's not anything to blow you away. Like,
he's been good. He's a supreme team player, does what stars are supposed to do, which is makes others better around him, you know, and does what he needs to do. For Boston fans, I'd say, you know, his moves around the basket are like Kevin McHale-ish. You know, Kevin McHale was kind of known as a black hole, didn't have the assist piece, you know, so he combines the scoring ability of a McHale with the passing ability of Bird. I'm just hyping up Boston. You know, with the size of I was just shameless plug for Boston.
I see that. By the way, Victor is Victor a response to Jokic, or is he a response to Giannis?
I think he's
the birth child of a Giannis, who's a birth child of a Kevin Durant. Like, you know, these ultra long, super skilled. Like, he's a two guard, but he's in a 7 foot body.
Yeah, and he's going to redefine that one, right? Because he's something just like we're saying. Jokic is you know, I agree with you that Shaq and others could have been if the game had been ready for them. But Jokic, boom, boom, boom. I think Victor, you know, he's his own animal potentially.
We'll see. Chet Holmgren looks a lot like him too. I'm just saying, a lot of those guys.
I mean, that's the right Jokic. You doubt because you say he's not athletic enough, and then someone like Victor, you go like, okay, yeah, sure, in theory looks good, but not big enough, right? Not strong enough, not physically ready to impact. I do think that is. Fair.
We'll see. I think the game helps him. The way the game is played right now helps him until he's bigger and stronger. The fact that it's still physical. It's still a physical game, but it's just not where it used to be. I think that's going to help him early on until he can put a little bit more meat on the bones.
You know, to know that we're coming to the end of a run this season, because it's been so much fun, obviously mostly just personally connecting with you and then doing what we like to do, talk sports. So a twinge of sadness, possibly maybe, you know, check in from time to time with a Zebra. And maybe this is where, you know, we get some people that we both know. You know, maybe we change up a format for some and
maybe do like a once a month thing.
Yeah. And we get guests on, which we always threaten to do and only sometimes do.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, I swear I'll you know, I'll watch as much baseball, just like I said, I'd watch women's basketball.
Well, you should, because it's been phenomenal. It's going to be a really good WNBA season. Some really great storylines. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is another episode of Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens, as always, joined by Coach Whit LeJure. Make sure that you follow along. Go back and look at all of the episodes of Zebra Stripes Podcast. You might hear from us in the summertime, but if not, you guys enjoy the baseball season. Stay blessed. Be safe. Love each other.